Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, why don't we just take your, a quick second to just, you know, introduce yourself and your title with the film. So I guess let's start with the filmmaker.
Hi, I'm Avril Speaks. I am the director and showrunner for Uprooted.
And then also, you know, one of the main subjects of the film. Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Sherry Warren, and I am part of Uprooted.
Right, exactly. And I appreciate you joining us. It's timely because it's going to be screening at the AFI Silver Theater in Silver Spring on Wednesday, February 16th. And is it also available on Discovery Plus right now, too?
It will be released on the 18th.
On the 18th. Okay, cool. So come see it at the Silver Theater first, and then it hits Discovery. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a really, really sad story, a heavy topic, but let's bring it to light for some of our listeners. That's the whole goal here. So who wants to just describe what it's about? Sherry, do you want to just describe about your brother and what happened sadly?
So in 1986, my brother Keith Warren was found strung up on a tree in Montgomery County, Maryland, and from 1986 until 2009, until she passed away unexpectedly, my mom was seeking answers to how, why he ended up on the tree. And from 2009 until current, I am still continuing to search for those answers.
Now, explain what the police initially ruled it, you know, what happened to the tree, all that, and why that was sort of, I don't know if you want to say suspicious, but yeah, like why that didn't sit well.
So in 1986, my mom was told that my brother was found strung up on a tree. He was at the scene. It was immediately ruled a suicide. However, there was no investigation. No one was interviewed. No one was questioned. The scene was not cordoned off, was not treated as a crime scene. It was unfortunately rushed through to get his body removed and sent to the funeral home choice of the lead at the time at the scene, and had his body embalmed prior to my mom notifying my mom. And those two items right there should start ringing bells, because one, he should have left that scene and gone to either the coroner's office or the medical examiner's office, not a funeral home, because at that time, from what we understood, you don't know if my brother was Jewish, if he was Muslim, you don't have any information. You didn't notify my mom until 6-7 hours later. And then by the time his body was ID'd, which was not until 24 hours later, they had already processed the body, meaning embalmed him. Mm-hmm. So those two things definitely stood out. And then my mom was told by the detective at the time the case was closed as a suicide immediately. However, there was nothing at that scene at 1:30 on the afternoon of July 31st, 1986, that would declare this to be a suicide. There was nothing there. So I don't know where that determination came from and how he got to it. But then a month later, they cut the tree down without telling us. If the case is closed as a suicide, why are you cutting trees down? And then we were told the explanation was we're collecting evidence. If you're collecting evidence after my closed case, yeah, where's the information about this evidence? Where's the requisite that you put in to go onto private property to cut this tree down? Where is the pictures of the tree? Where is the pictures of the limb? There is no information evidence about this tree that was cut down. So then evidence starts disappearing. You have questionable actions taken by the lead and the officer at the time. There's a lot.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Let me take a breath.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what all your family went through. I mean, cutting the tree down, no autopsy, things being rushed around, and almost, yeah, you'd think they'd be a little more careful with what would be a crime or a suicide scene. That something doesn't add up there. All right. Well, so Avril, when how do you get involved here? I mean, Sherry knows this story intimately. It was her brother. Has been fighting for answers for years. But how did you come on board?
So I came on board the story when Matt McDonough, who is our executive producer at Now This, He actually found this story, I want to say about 5 years ago, when he was listening to a podcast. And he was really intrigued by the story, and he contacted Sherry, and he and Sherry became really good friends. And, you know, we're just kind of pursuing, like, what are some ways that we could get this story out there? Because it's an important story that needs to be told. And then Matt approached me about directing, you know, what would become the series. And we spent a number of years just trying to pitch the project to different outlets. It's gone through several iterations of, you know, we thought maybe it could be a podcast, maybe it could be a series, a limited series. And, you know, it ended up with Discovery Plus being this three-part series that it is now. But that's how I became involved. And, you know, I took interest in the story because I grew up on the East Coast. I'm in LA now, but I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up in New Jersey and New York in the 80s. Spent a lot of summers, have a lot of family in Maryland. I lived in Silver Spring, you know, a few years ago. I've lived in Silver Spring. So I have, you know, kind of my own connections to the DC, Maryland area, and had never heard this story. And, you know, I just thought, you know, wow, how is it that it's this many years later and you have something in the 80s, you have this, you know, even just that thought of, you know, a young man hanging from a tree, and the fact that that doesn't send alarm bells is just baffling to me. And so I thought that that was really interesting, that this story hadn't been investigated, hadn't been investigated properly, and wanted to do this story. And, you know, wanted to help tell this story. So, and then, you know, I learned about Sherry as well. And I thought, you know, her story was just as interesting, the story of her and of her mother and her family and just their fight and their quest to find out what really happened to Keith. The strength that they've shown throughout all of these years was just, I mean, it's phenomenal. And I just wanted to help get the story told.
Yeah, it's much appreciated that you dove in and are telling this story. You said it's obviously a three-part docuseries. How do you, as a filmmaker, well, I guess some of this is in the edit too, but maybe in the script part too, but how did you go about dividing it up into the three parts? Like, you know, when we sit and watch this thing, you know, how do you decide what goes in part one, part two, and part three?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we were really trying to, because it's like we were like we have 3 hours to cram in 35 years worth of, you know, back and forth from this family. And so we really tried to treat it as, you know, in episode one, we just wanted to kind of course, obviously tell you about the case, but we wanted to do something a little bit different. You know, we kind of wanted to give the true crime genre just like a little bit of a spin and have a little bit more narrative. And so we wanted you to get to know the family and get to know Keith as a person. I think, you know, sometimes you watch, you know, true crime or whatever, and it's like, oh, this thing happened, this murder happened, and now we got to find out, we got to solve it, right? And I really wanted to take a different approach. And I wanted to be able to see Keith as a human being, not just as someone on a tree. And so we spent episode one trying to, you know, give a little bit about his backstory, who he was as a person, and also interview the family and, you know, just what that family dynamic meant, because the Warren family, you know, after meeting them, they're very close and a very tight-knit family. And so we just wanted to highlight that and highlight that bond that they have. So we spent a good portion of episode one kind of laying out the story, but also kind of giving that emotional narrative that that this is a family that was affected by this tragedy. And then for episode two, we really wanted episode two to focus on more of the case itself and what was done, what was not done, what things were, you know, kind of fishy, you know, what things didn't add up. And so we really kind of wanted to focus more on the specifics of the case. And so in episode two is where we really called in a lot of the experts, and we called in, you know, city officials and things like that to really talk more about the nuts and bolts of the physical case, the facts, you know. So we really talk about the facts of the case. And then episode three is really about where we go from here. You know, this is a relevant story. This is a story, even though it happened in the 80s, it still resonates today. There's still so much of this story that, you know, we see these patterns and we see these things happening still today. So we wanted to focus episode 3 on kind of what is the path forward now, and specifically to bring Sherry back into the story and talk about where she is in this journey now as she's trying to get this death certificate changed. So episode 3 kind of has a much more, it's rooted in today, you know, where we are today in terms of the case, and then also kind of taking a more widespread look as well in terms of policing and the criminal justice system and where do we go from here.
So is that the getting the death certificate changed? Is that sort of the ultimate goal at the end? And we won't spoil whether it happens or not. People got to watch the actual series. But I mean, is that sort of, that's the quest?
Yes, that was the goal for Sherry, and remains the goal. That was the goal, was to get the death certificate changed. So that's kind of the journey that you follow throughout the series.
In addition to getting the case, the police department to reclassify.
Reclassify.
Mm-hmm. Because the case, the evidence should, the case should be classified. How can I say this? The classification of this case should reflect, the evidence should reflect the classification of this case. And there is no evidence to show this is a suicide. There is not one piece of evidence to show that, the, not physical, scientific, or medically, that this is a suicide. So there, that fact alone should have, this case should be reclassified.
And what would we want it to be reclassified as? Is it homicide?
Either undetermined or murder, but it's not a suicide.
Gotcha. And so do you interview, I know you interview a lot of the family members. Do you also interview, you know, some of the police or authorities or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we did interview, you know, someone from the police department. We interviewed some of politicians who were around during that time. One of the sort of difficult things about this case was that it happened so long ago that trying to find people who were there and, you know, who were part of this, who are, you know, still living, still with us, or also that would just talk. I mean, it was even just a challenge just to get people to open up and do interviews with us and talk to us was a huge challenge for us. But yes, we did do a lot of those interviews and try to unpack what really happened.
Gotcha. And just so I have it for my purposes, where exactly was, you know, I know the tree's been cut down, but where exactly in Silver Spring is it located? Like, a lot of our listeners will know, you know, intimately the city of Silver Spring. So where is it exactly?
Wheaton, Maryland, Glenmont, Wheaton area, up near Leisure World, right off George Avenue.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. All right. And then, I guess on the filmmaking side, how long did it take to put this together? You know, how many, you know, hours of filming did you go out, if you have any of that sort of stats on hand?
Yeah, we started filming in July. I think we started, you know, we got the green light in June, I believe. It was either May or June of last year. And then we went into production in July. And so we spent, you know, a good part of the summer, July and August, filming interviews. We went back, I'm based in LA. We came back to LA and worked on an edit. And then we actually went back in September and shot more footage. Like, we shot more footage, we shot more interviews as well. So it's been about, it actually came together very quickly, particularly depending, you know, given how long, you know, we've been working on this and have, you know, trying to get this off the ground. But once it came together very quickly and we went right into production and, you know, we spent a few weeks doing interviews and then the rest of the time we spent in post trying to just put everything together and put all the pieces of the case together. There's so much information. There's so much information and so much, so many documents. There were a lot of documents that we had to sift through. So a good portion of our time was spent trying to sift through the documents and put together, you know, each piece of the story throughout the years.
Gotcha. Well, Before we run, we've spent a lot of, you know, we've spent a lot of time on your brother's death and how he died and all that. But Sherry, tell me a little bit more about your brother in life. You know, I want to know a little bit more about him. You know, what sort of stuff did he like to do? You know, what was his personality? You know, just let's smile and think back on some good things about him.
He was a people person. He could draw you in. He was quiet though. He was an introvert. We were kind of separate on the personality spectrum, but he was very loyal. He was my best friend, my protector. Everyone who knew him automatically he was drawn to him. He was handsome, and he thought he was as well. He had a great personality. He was he was a son. I'm going to repeat this. He was a son. He was a brother. He was a nephew. He was a cousin. He was a grandson. He was loved. He was not something that you can just make go away because you don't want to be bothered. That's what he was. He lived and he was loved. Not just by family, by friends, by everyone, again, who met him. He loved his car. He loved listening to Jimi Hendrix was one of his favorite. Oh my God, Jimi Hendrix. he was a great guy.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, you know, best of luck getting to the bottom of this and best of luck, you know, with the series. And I know, so the screening at AFI Silver on Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. to 8:15 is that's just part one. And then they got to tune in on Discovery Plus to see the other two. Is that right?
That's correct. It's just episode one. And then they can tune into Discovery as of the 18th to see all three episodes.
Great. Well, we encourage everyone to head out to the AFI Silver Theater in Silver Spring on Wednesday, February 16th. I really appreciate you both taking the time to join us. I know it's a really hard thing to talk about, but I appreciate you. You know, you're doing the work and bringing it to light. So that's all you can do at this point. So I really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having us. The opportunity to talk about it, you know, put a perspective on it. Thank you.